Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Mitzi Pearson, from Laytonville High School.
Oh, Hanani Hike from Laytonville High School.
And Oralee Cleva from Mendocino Youth Project.
Today our topic is social norms. Social norms is an approach to promoting health and reducing harm. This is accomplished by correcting misperceptions about the negative health behavior of one's peers. It is applicable to any group, but we are going to discuss how it works in high schools and middle schools. Social norms theory states that much of people's behavior is influenced by their perception of how other members of their social group behave. That is, we have a herd mentality. According to social norms theory, people tend to misperceive, that is, exaggerate, the negative health behavior of their peers. If people think harmful behavior is typical, they are more likely to engage in that type of behavior. The risks we are referring to include substance use, binge drinking, unsafe sex, and bullying. One component of reducing harm from these activities is education, knowledge of the effects of substances, and awareness of how STDs are transmitted, and how pregnancy is prevented, can go a long way in protecting young people. However, our education on risks tends to emphasize scare tactics. Once one finds that the risks are often exaggerated to make it seem scarier, scare tactics can often backfire. That is where the social norms approach can be very effective. We are guided and influenced by what we believe to be the norms, much more than what the actual norms are. If a student thinks everybody is going to be doing drugs, if she thinks everybody else expects her to be doing drugs, even if she is wrong in her perception, she is likely to be pushed along to engage in the behavior, because she thinks it is expected of her. The strategy of the social norms approach begins with gathering credible data from the target population. In our case, students anonymously answered questionnaires about substance use, bullying, and harassment. This data was then presented back to the student body in the forms of charts and posters, which tell the truth about its actual norms of substance use and bullying. For example, there is a poster at Laytonville High that says 10% of our students smoke marijuana on a consistent basis. That means 90% of our students do not smoke marijuana on a consistent basis. On the poster, the 90% is emphasized. This data counteracts the general belief that most students regularly use marijuana. By repeatedly exposing the students to a variety of positive database messages, the misperceptions that help to sustain problem behavior are reduced. Thereby, a great proportion of the population begins to act in accord with the more accurately perceived norms of health, protection, and safety. As a culture, we tend to discuss the extreme behaviors, not what most people are doing. The more we talk about the extremes, the more we think of that as the norm. Another example of student misperception is that surveys among university students found that most students think the majority of their peers use cocaine, whereas surveys show that only 5% actually use cocaine. Based on nationwide research, students typically overestimate risky behaviors and underestimate protective behaviors and attitudes. Part of the problem is that young people tend to brag and exaggerate their risky or dangerous behaviors. That is why it is important to compile actual statistics and inform the group about what is really normal in that group. These misperceptions that everyone is engaging in risky behavior has another negative effect. Those who actually do abuse substances or have risky sex can do so freely, thinking that they are just like everybody else. And those who do not engage in these behaviors encourage those that do by thinking the risk takers are just like everybody else. The concept of social norms is relatively new and is being implemented in the schools of Mendocino County. The social norms approach is not limited to schools. As an example, it has been used to encourage people to recycle by pointing out that the majority of residents in a city use their recycling facilities, thus recycling is the norm. Another area where the social norms concept can be applied is body image and eating disorders in young women. These young women base their ideal physical appearance on extremely thin women they seen on TV and in advertising campaigns. Surveys show that many young women overestimate how many of their peers engage in dieting and purging, thus making eating disorders seem normal. Today we are going to discuss the social norms approach to reducing unhealthy and risky behaviors among youth. We will talk for 20 or 30 minutes, and then we will open the phone lines for your ideas, experiences, and insights. We are in the Willett studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. Let's begin by discussing what we have learned about social norms. Hanani, did you see the poster at Laytonville High School about the percentage of students that smoke marijuana on a consistent basis?
Yes, I saw the poster, and I felt that it was a good poster because it changes your perception of what is really happening in the school. Many students think a large percentage of their fellow students are smoking marijuana. Meanwhile, it's just 10% of the population of students that actually do it. It's like in a family, no one wants to be the odd one out. And it's the same thing with this social norms thing. People think that they have to be normal. They have to be what they have to do what everybody is doing or what they think everybody is doing. And most of the time, they are wrong because somebody wants to smoke thinking that everybody is doing it. And the amount of people, like, that poster was really, it was surprising because 90% of the students do not smoke. I like the emphasis on the 90% because most people look at the 10% that are doing, say, well, I'm not the only one doing it. But it's the way they emphasize the 90%, it means majority of the people are not doing it. So if you actually want to be normal and be like, do everything everybody is doing, then you follow the 90% of people that are not doing it. So I like the poster. What did you think about it?
I just remember when I saw it, I was surprised, but I was relieved that Royal made the poster, that he was taking a step towards trying to encourage his peers to not smoke. I mean, the way he put it on the poster really, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it was nice to see that someone was trying to take a step.
As an educator, I go in and I teach about prevention education, and I find that doing exactly what they was talking about there, doing the scare strategies, is the way that, number one, fastest way to lose trust amongst the peers or the students. And if I just go in and really present real information, as opposed to trying to be like, this is the worst case scenario, and this is how it's going to be for you, instead of just being like, okay, you can be somebody who, you know, does some kind of drug and has a really bad experience right away, or you could be an old man who drinks alcohol and smokes tobacco for his whole entire life and dies of old age. And so it's good to, I think, present all of the different aspects, and it allows for engaging in dialogue. And I think a big problem with adults is they want to know all the answers, as opposed to being able to come in and just be like, what is real? Like, what, we don't really know what your experience of being a young person is right now, because we know what it was like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, but it's the face of how the young people are coming up in their age these days is changing so rapidly that you guys are really going to tell us how it is. And then we need to be able to, as adult generation, come up with plans around how can we help you understand the consequences of your actions, because I think in a big way young people are not knowing what the consequences of their actions are right away. They can eat the bad food, they can drink the alcohol and all that, and not wake up in the morning and have the serious effects that you do as an older person, you know? So just getting in there and getting real with people, having real conversations as opposed to being like, we're in denial, we're not going to talk about the fact that you drink alcohol or that you have sex or, you know? So what are some of the other social norms that you think are maybe stories that are being told about what young people are doing at your high school?
Sorry, I want to go back to what you're saying about scare tactics. I think another reason why it doesn't really work is because people, okay, for example, you go to high schools and tell people what the real statistics is, or, you know, find out what is happening and make a comparison between what people think and what is really happening. But then if you use the scare tactics, people don't believe because they feel, well, I know 10 people that are doing this thing and nothing is happening to them. Like you can say, it affects your brain and you lose your teeth and all of that. And they can actually show you 10 people that it doesn't happen to, because they know, it's like they feel the people presenting it to them are just making them look like fools. And students and teenagers generally like to prove that they know more than you think they do. So they'll try to show you how many people are doing it and have not died from it. So that's another problem of scare tactics.
I think it's nice that we're starting to educate younger kids too, starting in middle school, because it seems like they have it set in their mind that high schoolers are doing everything. So just coming into as a freshman, they're thinking, oh, if I haven't done it yet, I better do it soon so I fit in with everybody. And it's scary because it's some of the seniors aren't even doing it. No one's doing it, and but they just have that thought that everybody is.
And a desire to want to grow up fast. And I think maybe that's part of the problem with alcohol at the age limit in America. Mm-hmm. I see is alcohol is abused more than in some other countries or other states in which there's not that limit and you're able to have healthy times where you're witnessing your family use alcohol in a healthy way versus making it some forbidden fruit that if I drink alcohol, then I'll be an adult, or if I have sex, or and then a lot of them are really, especially in junior high, aren't realizing the consequences of how serious some of the things that they can engage in, you know? I mean, I do hear of the occasional, you know, person who at 13 years old lost their virginity in the center bathroom, unfortunately, or, you know, is doing inappropriate sexual behavior in the junior high bathroom, but that is not the norm, and yet that is still what is, again, emphasized, like you're saying, like, people want to, this is how bad I am, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the feeling of impressing other people. Like, I had some people might... you just get your license and you want to take your friends out in your car. And then instead of going with the speed limit, the person wants to go faster than the speed limit just to impress your friends. And I think that's the same thing with many of these things. Some people might not actually be doing it, but they just want to impress their friends. So they say, I always do it every day. It's like...
Mm-hmm. A lot of it goes towards peer pressure too. I mean, if you're at a party and all your friends are smoking pot or drinking and you're not, then you might, even if they aren't judging you, you might feel that they are, and therefore you'll try to do the same, and if you can't handle it, you'll try not to show it because you don't want to, your friends are doing it, so you think it's fine, but...
Yeah, like marijuana use amongst high schoolers at Willits High School this past year for 2010, only 21% of seventh graders were smoking in the past 30 days, and then only 35% were smoking in the 11th grade. That's only one out of three students in the 11th grade are smoking, maybe on a regular basis, but at least in the past 30 days. And again, I find that amazing, like the misperception that is common at the school. And I do quite a few activities in my classroom presentations that are asking people what the difference in the perception is versus the reality, and just how often, you know, the idea is people drink all the time, people smoke all the time, and engaging in sexual activity, which again. Amazing amount of gap between the reality and the perception.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything on the alcohol use or?
Yeah.
I know, again, at the high school, there's only 27% of 7th graders have used alcohol in the past 30 days, and then you go to 33% in the 9th grade and 49% in the 11th grade, which, again, half in the past 30 days is a large number, but it's not like everybody is doing it, mm-hmm. right? Again, and maybe you don't find those statistics, but I imagine it's probably pretty similar. And you're going to see, I mean, for me, at least in the trends in the marijuana and alcohol, is that the marijuana alcohol trends are pretty similar, but alcohol is still slightly more of a problem as far as abuse amongst young people, which I find is interesting because you would imagine in this community, people are going to think marijuana is the biggest problem because we live in this community, but actually alcohol still is the most abused drug, really, in this community and amongst, you know, in all of the United States, actually, is the most commonly abused drug amongst adults, amongst teenagers. And part of that, I think, is because it is a social norm to drink, because it's okay to drink, because you can go to any store or any restaurant or really almost, you know, most places and get alcohol, where it's any other drug is going to be much more difficult to not use and you're looked down upon much more significantly when you're consuming other drugs, which I think has a big effect on how much people are going to consume.
Yeah, in Laytonville High School, the percentage of students that had that didn't drink in the past 30 days was 59%, while in the middle school it was 67%.
That did not?
Yes. And then for the if they had consumed alcohol in the more than 10 days, 10 or more days in the past 30 days, it was only 1% at the high school and 5% at the middle school. So I was, when we were looking at these earlier, I was surprised to see the middle schools, I mean, at least at Laytonville, the middle school had higher percentages for consuming more. And I wasn't sure if it's because they're exaggerating while they took the survey or because...
It's true.
And there might be a little bit of both there, too. And mm-hmm. middle schoolers, like we're saying before, don't get the consequences, maybe have even less of the ill effects of mm-hmm. the risky behavior. And so they can drink even more excessively or, you know, and again, I remember personally being in junior high and I remember wanting to be able to have the best story. I remember that state of mind. That's like, I want to be the center of attention and you're trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to get attention? What's going to make me cool? Like, what is the right thing to say? I don't know what to, I'll say anything, you know, or I'll do something. I'll do anything, you know, because I've heard some stories and I sit with young people all the time and listen to what they're engaging in. And it's like, that's some risky behavior. And, you know, and again, it's going to be modeled by your parents. And we're talking a little bit before about how maybe your parents aren't drinking and smoking. And so that's not what you think is a common thing. Yeah. I grew up in a household with a lot of drugs. So I learned that was the way to do things when I was growing up. And eventually I got to the point where I was like, I'm either going to have to stop or I'm going to die, like, and change my life around and do what I'm doing now, which I'm grateful I made it here. So I'm glad I'm not one of those statistics of people who have, you know, passed on for some crazy drunk driving or excessive use.
The idea of binge drinking, you were talking about it earlier. Can you explain more of it?
So binge drinking is really excessively drinking. They have varying statistics, but some people can say that, you know, a specific example of a binge drinking session is drinking 5 drinks in an hour, which the body can only really digest and move through 1 drink in an hour, really, at a healthy rate. And the idea is that somebody can not necessarily drink every weekend or not necessarily drink even, you know, maybe they only drink once a month. But when they do drink, they drink to an extreme. And then that often causes blackouts in which, and do you guys know what a blackout is or do you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is a blackout? Do you?
It's when you completely just forget what happened and.
Right. So you can be awake and conscious and mm-hmm. even, you know, you can engage in sexual activity. You could get in a fight. You can all those things. And literally like your memory bank has squeezed the memory out of it. It's kind of like, you know, So that's, and it tends to happen in most, in those binge drinking sessions, because the body is like so overwhelmed. It's like, I don't know what to do. I'm not going to focus on memory right now. You know,
that's so kinda, can that be applied to drugs?
It could be applied to drugs. And what I think that the piece of calling with the alcohol is, they've called it binge drinking because it's, again, it's one of those most common ones, you know. So when people use a lot of coke or a lot of something, you know, they're just being addicted, versus, you know, they've just come up with this kitsch term that's, it's mostly the binge term of that is mostly applied to alcohol versus calling binge cocaine use or binge. But you can binge on that. But when, in the common language right now, when people are saying people are binging, has it tends to be associated with alcohol. Although that term has been around for, you know, 30 or 40 years and associated with excessive use of drugs. So, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of one of the campaigns they were doing at school. It's what, it was like a health fair. And we're talking about how some of these drugs are prescription drugs and are meant to be taken. There's a particular dose for a particular length of time. But the people abusing it, okay, if the prescription is in a capsule, when you take it in, it goes, the body digests it or breaks it down just slowly at a particular length of time. But then for somebody that just breaks it open and maybe snuffs it in, the person is taking a large amount at just one...
One session.
Yeah, one session. So, I think that's kind of like what you're saying on binge drinking.
Yeah, that's very good analogy around that, you know, and that is a very common thing I'm hearing amongst, you know, with all kinds of powders, with Oxycontin, with Vicodin, crushing it up, like you're saying, and snorting it, because the effect goes straight to the brain versus, like you're saying, a time release with most drugs that are going to, oh, this person, you know, the pill is designed specifically to release at the right rate. Yeah. So, yeah, that is a very good analogy.
Another misperception is bullying in schools. I think in our school, a lot of people, bullying isn't really a problem, I don't think, but there's a lot of teasing going on. For Laytonville, at least, it's, I don't think many people are very affected by it, but the problem is, I guess you never really know how it really affects the person you're teasing. And students think that everybody's bullying each other, so, or teasing each other, so they do it too. But the problem is, people aren't like bullying as much.
As much. Like talking about bullying. Most people don't really know what really is bullying. You might be bullying somebody without even knowing. And I think there was a survey about that. Something about, I think they asked questions about how many of you have spread rumors about somebody in the past maybe 30 days or 10 days. And nobody really thinks it's bullying. Or few people think it's, most people think it's not bullying. But that's kind of bullying because it hurts the person. Telling stories that of things that the person did not do, or even if the person did anything, it's a kind of bullying. It's, there are many other ways. I don't know. There was something we're looking at that showed different ways people can be bullied, but.
And it's really different amongst, yeah, they have quite a few different studies that have come out now about how different women, young women bullying is versus young man bullying. So young man is like more of that typical thing you're going to think of, the hitting, the punching, the snapping, the throwing stuff, right? Versus young women will have a tendency more to do the gossiping and excluding people. And like, oh, you can't be in part of our group and we're going to make you feel isolated and that kind of whatnot. That's like definitely much more kind of, you know, the young woman's much less likely to get in a physical fight. And so, and like you're saying, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily consider that bullying, yet it is incredibly hurtful, right? You're going to have that whole saying of, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It could be like, no, those words really pierce my soul, actually. Thanks for, I'm going to remember that when I'm, you know, because seriously, I'm 28 and I remember things that people said to me when I was six, you know, I'm like, I still remember that, you know, because it hurt, you know, it's like something, but, and it's true. And I'm in 9 different junior highs and high schools between here, Willits and Covelo. And I have almost every single junior high and high school asking me to deal with bullying situations. So it's not happening as much as some other people might perceive, yet it is an incredible problem. And I think what you're saying about more of the teasing happening, like, and people not thinking that it's a big deal, but that, again, I've done quite a few exercises in asking people, oh, does that teasing that people do occasionally, is it offensive sometimes? And when I can get a really good, honest group, you know, they almost every single time are going to let me know. Most of the time it is more offensive than I ever let on, because I'm not going to be uncool if I admit that that actually did hurt my feelings, that you call me fat or that you call me gay or, you know, all these typical slurs that people are throwing out there.
And it gets really bad, because I've been seeing it in the news, how people kill themselves. Just, they were bullied. People think it's like, well, it's just bullying. What can be worse than that? You know, there are many things that are worse than that. Things that are killing people. But then people kill themselves because they are bullied. I don't know how easy it is to kill somebody. Not kill somebody, but like kill myself. I don't know if I'll do that. But it means what they were facing was so bad that they would choose to kill themselves than to face it.
A lot of the time it's embarrassing, like, to let on that it's bothering you, like, and even it's hard to tell your parents that you're getting bullied, because they might say, oh, it's just bullying. I mean, you can tough it out, but it's not as easy that sometimes.
Well, and another part of the problem is that the people who are bullying are really good at doing it when they're not being seen. So there's statistics out there that'll say that 75% of teachers think that they always intervene in bullying situations, and students report that only 25% of teachers intervene during bullying situations. And you're going to say that, I'm going to say that that's because of the fact that the bullies are going to get good, are good at not at getting away with the bullying behaviors, right? And another part of why I believe cyberbullying, which is bullying through text messages and online and all those other ones, have become so popular, is because it's really, really hard to track, and it's much easier to not, you don't have to deal with the person's reaction. You can just send something. You can think about it. I mean, that's what's nice about writing a letter, right? You can think about what you want to say. And that can be in a good way, or it can be in a negative way. You can really think, I'm going to send 12 words to this person, but I'm going to tear them apart, you know, just so deliberately, just do that little succinctly, you know. And it's a serious thing. They've literally called this term cybercide, because people are, you know, it's it's like if you're getting harassed everywhere you go all the time and it's constantly, I mean, you're asking yourself the question. I wonder that too. Like, what would take me over the edge? Like, how much would I have to be bullied in order to be able to consider taking my life? Like, that's a huge question. And yet it's legitimate, because it's happening like way, way more often than we'd care to know. You know, it's really, it's an issue that, and part of that is you guys as teenagers are going through what Eric Erickson would call the stage of development of finding your personal identities. And so if you're not really establishing your personal identity and getting a sense of who you are and getting validated from your peers and having a sense that I'm good at things and having a sense that I belong somewhere, it can be quickly, you can quickly be isolated, you know, and unfortunately I'm witnessing that everywhere I go, that's you know, that's happening. So,
and I think the way people look at it, some people have no problem with anybody teasing them. Like Mitzi was saying earlier on, if there's some, you know, people tease her all the time, but she looks at it differently from the way somebody else might look at it. Somebody might be really hot about it. The person might not even realize that they're being teased. But so what I'm trying to say is that different people have different ways of looking at it. What you say to somebody might hurt the person, and then for another person, the person might just laugh at it and just, you know, look at it in a different way. Elion, you were asking me about the comparison between drug abuse and bullying and all of that in US versus in Nigeria. And I think drug abuse and alcohol use is lesser in Nigeria than it is here. But I think the bullying is more than it is. There's the bullying in Nigeria is more than what I've seen or heard happens here in US. Because you have things like boarding school where the seniors bully the juniors. So you make, you can make the younger ones, the junior students, do just about everything. It's like the seniors almost have more power over their junior students than even the parents or teachers do. They can tell them to crawl to the for a long distance or roll in the mud or fetch water. During water scarcity, the students cannot even find water for themselves to bath or to drink or to do anything. But you see the senior with a big bucket giving the junior students to fill up from where, you know, like you wonder where they will get the water from. And if they don't do it, they'll be punished. You know, there's just terrible bullying. And many people don't really realize that it is bullying. They just think it is part of secondary school. You just have to pass through it. If you don't pass through it, then you didn't really go to a real secondary school. But I think more is being done about it now than it was before.
Yeah, what about, how do the, do you know how the teachers feel about it? Is it kind of like they look at it as a tradition too?
I think before, the teachers used to think it was like a tradition or something they also passed through and, you know, it just helps everybody. But now, teachers are doing more to stop it. Even though I don't think they can completely eradicate it because they're not in the hostels with us. We have house parents, but that's just like two people or three people. You can't know what 300 and something students are doing all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're facing another person, this person is doing something else. And I think they also threaten them. So I can say, you go and do this. And if you tell anybody, I'll, you know.
Yeah.
So they can't really, I don't know how much they can do, but they have been doing, they have been talking about it and calling this, for example, if a younger student reports somebody, they might warn the person or punish the person or do something to make the person stop. I don't know if that works because for many people, they get angry, they realize, so you went to report me to the principal. And you thought they would expel me. Well, they didn't. La, la, la. And I'm here to cause you more problems. So I don't really know what they're doing now to help and if it will really help.
Do you guys find that it's true here in Laytonville High School as well, that the bullying that happens is underreported and not really supported or followed through?
Yeah, well, I know even the teachers sometimes tease their students, but from my point of view, bullying in Laytonville High isn't a big problem. Like I said earlier, I think everybody really gets along, so it's not as big of a problem as in other schools, in other bigger schools, but I think normally when a student gets bullied, they kind of just try to tolerate it and maybe ignore the person that's bullying them, but a lot of I haven't really heard about any students really going to a teacher or going to like any faculty member to ask for help. I think they just try to like deal with it on their own, which is sometimes really unhealthy, but I don't know exactly how the teachers deal with it because I haven't really seen it that much.
Right, well, and I think that it's similar to what you're saying about Nigeria in that it's really, really difficult. Maybe it's a slightly different context, but it's very similar in that teachers and administrators and everybody needs to be on board with how to deal with bullying because it's very difficult for a teacher who will hear somebody call somebody else in their class just teasing. Like you said, most of the bullying is just teasing and name-calling, but it can mm-hmm. really lead to some serious stuff. So what is the protocol? How do we respond on a consistent level? You can never make any kind of name-calling ever in my class. Like, I have – that's my rule. Like, even if I go and do a class presentation of somebody, call somebody else a name, I'm going to say, you can do that on your own time. You know, you're going to know that I might tolerate some other kinds of things and stretch the limits on some things, but you will never be able to tease somebody else in my class. Like, that's not okay for me. Like, I want you to know that somebody has that kind of standard. And to get a whole entire community and a whole entire administrative board and school and everything, everybody to react and respond that same way is really challenging. And I think that that's part of why bullying is such an issue at every single place. Everywhere I go, it's like, oh my God, we have this bullying situation and we don't know what to do. And same thing, students everywhere I go are also like, the school doesn't know how to deal with it. We don't have any kind of legitimate follow through. Like you said before, we get bullied, we go and tell, and then that person comes back and gives me more crap later because mm-hmm. I went and told on somebody, and it happens over and over and over again. And we're not going to say it's nothing but the school's, you know, fault. It's just, it's a really, really difficult thing to address. It's like overall, it's just a huge issue, you know? So how do we address that?
Yeah.
Educating people is my belief, you know, making them or helping them understand what it's like to step into somebody else's shoes, giving them opportunities to be empathetic and know what it's like and remember or just feel my feelings. What does it feel like when somebody is teasing me? Like, how does that feel? And
yeah. mm-hmm.
how can I turn that around and apply that when I'm going to tease somebody else?
Yeah, somebody said we might not physically carry a gun or a weapon to kill somebody, but what you say to the person has already killed the person. You have killed the person with what you have said. The person might not die physically, but it's almost like the person is dead emotionally, kind of. I don't know how to explain it. Exactly. So I think that's really, really bad.
Yeah. We are going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call in, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth in the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about harm reduction through a social norms program, especially how it applies to the youth of our community. Have any of the statistics about high school substance use surprised you? Do you think that the social norms approach could be an important key in harm reduction among our youth? While other approaches would be effective, do you think that scare tactics work to reduce substance abuse? Is your peer group subject to the same kind of misperceptions that high school students have? Could a social norms approach be helpful in promoting environmental, political, or social justice causes? The phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion on social norms and harm reduction. We'd really like to hear from you.
Mitzi, we're talking about some ways to get this information out and help people. Or what kind of approaches would be effective in educating people on some of these social norms? So my question to you is, for you, what tactic will be effective in convincing you as a person?
I think visual. I mean, having people answer questions out loud about how many people, I mean, what percentage they think, I mean, what percentage of their peers they think are taking drugs or drinking to excessive amounts, and maybe having them, I mean, videos really help me understand and charts. Just anything visual that helps you see that what you think is actually a lot higher than what really is happening. Mm.
My work, the Mendocino Youth Project, put on an event last year called Death to Meth, and they did a bunch. It was held at the Redwood Valley Rancheria, and it had a lot of education about meth, and then it had music as well, and it was a sober, fun, free event for the community. And we're also going to be doing another one. It's called the Youth Action Party, and it's going to be similar but with alcohol education on April 1st down at the Space Theater in Ukiah from 1 to 7. And that, again, another, you know, fun music with education and activities and giving people, young people, an opportunity and a place and things to go to that aren't related to alcohol, that aren't, you know, promoting those kinds of things. Because I think a big problem is that young people, especially in this county, don't have anything to do, right? Yeah. And so what are we going to do? We're bored and we want something fun. We're going to make it a little bit more fun by drinking alcohol and walking on the same block we've walked on 20 million times before, you know? So it's, so providing opportunities, different things, education of fun, you know, oh, I'm going to, and making it cool enough that junior high and high school people are going to want to go, because that's the other thing is there's been attempts, but some of the older people don't really get what the young people want, you know? So the people that are the problem, you know, the quote unquote problem students aren't going to show up at those events because it's not cool enough, right? And so that's the balance, I think, in getting and educating the people who are potentially going to be higher risk at participating in those activities that we're talking about.
And I think, I think those programs are really effective because a lot of students don't have an opportunity to know those statistics. And seeing that, I think it really, whether or not it really makes a difference in their lives, they, at least they know it, and they themselves can know that if I don't do this, I'm not going to be the one person that never does it.
And what you're saying about people being bored, not having anything to do, I think that's what Healthy Start at Laytonville helps minimize, because many, they offer teen drop-ins after school every day. So there are people who go home and they don't have anything to do, and, you know, they're just thinking of, they might be thinking of ways to cause harm to somebody or do something good, in, you know, just being bored. But with Healthy Start activities, many people go there, they get help with their assignments, because I think it goes at maybe fifth grade and up to high school, I think. So they get help with their assignments. They can use the internet. They can play games. There's even a music club that started. And there's just all these activities that engage most of the students, so they don't have to be practicing unsafe behaviors, trying out things when they feel they are bored and they don't have any other thing to do except try out what everybody is doing. So,
or what they think everybody's doing.
Yeah, what they think everybody's doing. The number is 456-9991. Again, 456-9991.
So for me, social norms, my whole philosophy is, really to not go in there and scare them and to give them genuine information. And I feel like, I have definitely interfaced with a lot of the adult population who think, you know, if we really are gonna, and you already said this before, but if we scare them and we give them the worst, then they're gonna know that they're gonna put two and two together, that this behavior right now is going to lead me to that place. And that's the big thing that is developing in teenagers' minds right now, is that A plus B is going to equal C. And so that connection isn't going to be made even if you just try to, like, shove it in every single possible, or, you know, every way. It's just, it's not going to happen. So I really, I enjoy going around. I've been in this community for 3.5 years now, and I have a reputation for being really honest. And I can tell by the way that young people ask me questions and get real with me and just, so what is that? How is that? Like, what's the effect of this? And what really, what is that really like, you know? And so I'm able to really have genuine discussions. And I think that the permission to have discussion and have them be curious and ask about that allows them to take in a lot more of the information than just trying to, you know, here, this is what you're going to, this is what you're going to remember about this situation. This is what can happen to you. Like, is I'm curious about something, right? Isn't it true? Like, you have your parents screaming and yelling at you and listen to me, and you're not going to, you know, versus being like, okay, so what can we do in order to help you be more motivated to want to wash the dishes on a regular basis? Like, let's have a discussion about that, you know? Like, you're more likely, right, to sit down and actually, we're going to get somewhere with the second way of strategy, you know? And so for me, that whole social norms in the education field looks like that. Looks like I don't necessarily have the answers. I don't have everything that you need to know. I don't know how that looks like in your life. I don't know where you've been. because some of the stories of some of the things I hear in these places, it's like, man, like whatever happened to you last night or this morning before you came to school might really be in the way. And that's why you're distracted, or that's mm-hmm. why you're falling asleep in class, or that's why you don't have your homework. Yeah. It's not because you're a slacker kid. It's because you're going through a really hard time. And I have no idea. I have no idea what that is, you know. So if I can give compassion like that, and I think what you said before about teachers teasing students, I've even literally been doing a bullying presentation and had a teacher turn around and bully a kid, you know. So it's like that does happen, you know. It really is unfortunate, and again, we're modeled and we teach what we've learned, you know, what we've been taught. And a lot of the my adult like the generation that are in their 40s and 50s grew up in a time when young people are to be seen, not heard, you know. So mm-hmm. so in a certain way, they still are kind of like trying to, maybe some of them are trying to like get rid of that, you know, story about that young people are to be seen, not heard, because what a gift you guys have to bring to us if we can really listen to what you have to say and give us new ideas. Because obviously what we're doing right now, like the way that we're operating our system, isn't working, right? So, and I believe that you all have the answers. And so for me, social norms in action looks like that is we have a foundation, we have a basis, but you guys have the new answers for us. And how can we help you, you know, come up with those answers? So, again, that youth action party that I was telling you guys about is going to be April 1st from 1 to 7 p.m. And it's at the Space Theater. And, again, it's alcohol awareness education. There's going to be 5 different bands. There's Top Shelf. There's a variety of different music. I'm going to be teaching a hip-hop class there for free. I'm going to be doing capoeira demonstrations. So there'll be kind of visual art and games and all that kind of good stuff. So it's going to be a good time, free event for the community.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Great show.
Thank you.
What I am wondering is how would... I hope you think about this, but... how would you have the adult community support this that's clear to a lot of people of all ages? How does that happen? How do you get support without becoming the cannon fodder?
Well, I would think that our parents should model like good behavior. I mean, don't do something you wouldn't want your children doing. Yeah. What did you think?
Well, I was just thinking at any level, you know, whether it's with dealing with alcoholism, where it comes to violence in the adult community, and how that's handled, you know, in our community, both inside and outside the law. The serious violations of adults upon youth and children, to make a strong stand, to make a strong boundary for that in the adult community. Anyway, I just don't know how adults can best help. I mean, except, you know, trying to be a good example wherever we have to show up.
Yeah. I think another way would be like what Early was saying earlier, listening to what younger people have to say, because sometimes they have ways in which some people are just doing things to get away. And if parents or older people are able to listen to them and find out how things are going, find out, just get some information from the younger ones, I think that can be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, another thing I think is joining organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters, which has a sect up here, and providing actual mentoring for some other young people who aren't having positive role models or enough positive role models in their life. And another thing that Sheriff Almond and Jerry Gonzalez and a number of the different communities and agencies and I did this past fall was try to start a nonviolent basically forum for community members to come together and discuss the very nature of what you're asking is how can community and how can adults get involved in supporting young people and actually helping communicate. That kind of that group has fizzled out, but we're definitely attempting to reestablish that. If you were interested in communicating or being a part of that, I would.
I'd like to help in any possible way.
The host, Dan Roberts, has my information, and I could certainly get hooked up with you. So,
yeah.
We also have Michael Pritchard, who is going to be coming here on this Wednesday from 6 to 8 at the high school in Willits Auditorium, and he's going to be talking kind of a comedian's version of what young people are not saying to their parents.
Yeah.
And it's a free event, and he's nationally acclaimed. He's a very amazing interpretation of kind of understanding where young people are coming from, but from an adult, being able to explain it in adult terms. So
yeah.
I think educating yourself.
That happening in the whole larger community. I'm over on the coast. I'd like to see that happening in Fort Bragg, Mendocino, or wherever is appropriate there, Down Point Arena, Willits, Ukiah, Laytonville, you know, and then there's Lake County. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, it's important that children are getting educated by their parents as well as their peers, because I think a lot of students really look up to their parents mm-hmm. as role models, and that's kind of what you're taught to do. So
yeah.
Learning from them would really help, I think, eliminate a lot of things. Again, the phone number is 456-9991.
I also think doing things together as a family, like eating together at the table for dinner or playing games or doing things together can help people, because when people stay at home, their parents don't have any time for them. What their friends are doing is harmful. They tend to join them. So if parents and families generally can create a way for everybody in the family to come together and do things together, eat together, you know, different things, I think it can help.
And even adults are perceiving how, the percentage of younger adults that are doing things such as drugs or engaging in sex. And I think that them thinking that that percentage is higher is making them not trust the younger generation more mm-hmm. and doing more things that maybe trying to really enforce in their children not to do that. And it's kind of backfiring because mm-hmm. before the kids are even doing it, they're telling them, they're almost lecturing them.
And,
okay. Yeah.
Some people said, if you don't want a teenager to do something, the best way to get a teenager or a child to do something is tell them not to do it. So you're telling them something that they may not have heard of, actually probably have, but even if they have not heard of it, why you keep telling them don't do this, they want to find out, what is this thing my parents have been telling me not mm-hmm. to do? I don't want to try it.
They never would have thought about doing it.
Yeah.
So.
It's like putting a no trespassing sign in front of your house. Okay.
Why?
Exactly. Why is that? And the person just wants to I want to go into that person's house and just find out why this sign is up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that there's a DARE program, which is a drug education program that came out when I was in elementary school, sixth grade. And I got introduced to all the different drugs. And at the end, I was like, wow, that kind of sounds cool. Yeah. I was like, I know they're trying to scare me, but, and it is a careful balance between introducing something to somebody and educating them mm-hmm. versus introducing it to them and making them want it, right? And, so it's like there's a fine balance there, but...
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I would like it if you would repeat the drug and alcohol statistics from Laytonville. Hi.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mitzi. Bye.
Um, Where is it? Is it this one?
Oh, alcohol use, right?
Yeah, well, for alcohol use... Oh, no, this is... In Laytonville High... I need to find this one. Oh, here it is. For the high school in Laytonville, the amount of students that had not... drunk any alcohol in the past 30 days was 59%. That drank either 1 or 2 days in the past 30 days was 25%. In 3 or 9 days was 14%. And 10 or more days was 1%. And in the middle school, it was 67% had not drunk any. 23% had drank 1 or 2 days. 5% had drank 3 or 9 days, and 5% had drank 10 or more days. And I think in the high school it's a little lower than I expected, but which is good. And it just proves that people do think people are drinking more and doing more things than they really are.
How about you? Are you surprised by that statistic, or...
I wasn't really surprised. I was kind of surprised about the middle school. It was higher than I would think, but in the high school, I was just relieved that it was lower than I thought.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at part of the intro where you read about body images, where people read magazines and see models and think, oh, I have to be like that model. And they do everything they can just to have that kind of body the model has, or, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but where you have anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and different things that people do just to look like somebody. Most of the time, people even become unhealthy because of, you know, they skip meals. I don't know all the kinds of things people go through just to have a particular kind of body, to look like somebody. And it's just the same thing with this social norms we're talking about. People want to be like other people. They think it's very cool to do... to practice an unsafe behavior.
Well, and I think that's a big part of what you're saying. Like, if you're going to turn Barbie doll, like the measurements of Barbie, into a real human, she literally couldn't stand up because her feet are too small and she's too top heavy. So, it is really perpetuated, you know, the idea that women should be, you know, 110 pounds and 5'11" or something, which is scary and is really not the accurate depiction of what most people are like. And I think, again, it creates all kinds of unhealthy behaviors because the expectation is unrealistic. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, a big common thing here is abuse of meth, and one of those big reasons is because it's effective in helping people lose weight on a short-term basis. On a long-term basis, it can mess up the whole entire mechanism that controls weight, and they can actually backfire, like we've been talking about how a lot of these different strategies will backfire. Well, that one can too, and that should be good. People get very large because it messes that system up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's totally true. Do you feel like that's an issue up there in Laytonville High School, that some of the girls are, or people in general, are having image issues?
I think everybody, well, not everybody, because I don't really know, but it seems like the students in our school are really healthy. I mean, I think a lot of them are trying to do more sports or find time to work out, and it seems like a couple people started, and then all their friends, I mean, it's kind of a fun way to, I mean, two friends can go and work out in our gym, and, I mean, it's a good way to just hang out with your friends and lose weight at the same time. Mm-hmm.
I think there's this club, well, I don't know if it's a club, but they go to the health center to weigh themselves every Thursday. So it's for any kind of anybody, if you want to lose weight, you can join them. If you want to get to the kind of weight you want to have, you can join them. And if you just want to stay at irregular weight. And I think they also said they were going to be giving some help to people who needed to use the Laytonville gym. So they have, I know they pay a particular amount of money to get to use the gym for at least a month. But I think it's even less for high school students and younger. So going to the gym to, you know, lose weight instead of trying to fall sick or use drugs to lose weight.
Yeah, again, I just, for just the whole idea, for me, the biggest part of what's going to help us develop social norms that are healthy, because you talked about in the beginning how social norms can either be a negative thing or they can be a positive thing, like with the recycling, that we can make a social norm that everybody recycles, we can make a social norm that everyone gets out and involves and gets involved in their community and in their high schools and volunteers and contributes and donates, right? That can become a social norm. And so I think that trying to come up with solutions, getting young people involved in these kinds of conversations and figuring out what are the solutions that we need in order to make our communities healthier and develop healthier social norms is going to be the next step in us really making that happen. It's getting the ideas and getting the people power, and grateful to that woman who called in and wanted to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Our hosts today have been me, Hanani,
Mitzi,
and Orly.
Thanks to all our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We are happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with the Safe Schools Healthy Students Bronco Project, Building Resiliency Opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco program, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314. Again, 459-5314. Or email at psanborn@mcoe.us. psanborn@mcoe.us. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162. P.O. Box 1162. Willits, CA 95490. Or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Sunday of April, the 3rd, at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in April.